Welcome to the Tim Fowler Show, where production is paramount and we discuss the tools, time, and people associated with getting jobs done and making a profit. On today's episode of the Tim Fowler Show, we will be talking about the locus of control with the help of special guest Jeff Forward of Forward Design Build in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Alongside Tim Fowler, I'm your co-host Steve Wheeler. Here is the Tim Fowler Show.
Hi everyone, Tim Fowler here, and welcome to another episode of the Tim Fowler Show. As I always do, please keep your ideas coming in, whether it's for a guest or whether it's for a topic. Send them to me at tim@remodelersadvantage.com. So our guest today was with us a few weeks back where we had a conversation about family versus team as cultures within a company. Fascinating conversation. It started off with Jeff, our guest, sharing a video with me about how he wanted the company to be more of a team than to be a family. And in that episode, Jeff mentioned this thing that was new to me called locus of control. Now, that's not the insect locust, but locus. Okay. And so I started doing a little research and I could look into it. I thought, man, this would be a great topic to bring up because it's right at the heart of everything that business owners, production managers, everybody wants in themselves and in their employees. And so, like I mentioned, it's been around for a while. It's just been new to me. And so for a lot of us, you know, building is what we do. And sometimes we get into this mode of like, I'm so focused in on the building business, I don't look into enough of what's going on in other businesses. You might even be saying to yourself, ah, locus of control, what's that? That's some, you know, philosophy or hocus pocus or mumbo jumbo. Who needs that in the business world? But what I'm seeing in the marketplace is that owners of businesses and mid-level managers have to be a much more people savvy now in order to be able to attract the right people to their business and to keep them. In other words, what we're doing now is trying to run real businesses. We're not just building things anymore. We're trying to run real businesses. And so we have to take some of these concepts from the business world at large. You know, all those people that are in high-rise buildings that think of these things, and we have to bring them in and say, how do they apply to this remodeling business? And so that's what we're trying to do today, and I hope you get as much out of it as I've already gotten from just looking on the internet and looking at some stuff, and I'm sure our guest, Jeff, is going to share a lot more with us. So, Steve, let's get started.
All right. Well, we're excited to welcome back Jeff Forward. He is the founder and co-owner with his wife, Monica, of Forward Design Build Remodel in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Over 23 years, the company has grown from one person doing everything to a team of 30-plus engaged, positive, and supportive people. A recent accomplishment was a thriving and stronger team after Monica's cancer battle. Our path towards continued success is heavily focused on team building and leadership building. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thank you very much. Excited to be here.
Hey, Jeff, in case anybody missed the episode that was probably just a few weeks ago, give us a little bit more information about Forward Design Build and you know, how big are you and how do you manage the jobs and things like that?
Well, we are a design build company focusing on residential remodeling only, residential only. We don't do any commercial, and 95% of our work is remodeling and 5% is custom homes. And we're about 34 people right now, and we do about 30 projects a year.
Okay, cool. So, and you have in-house staff, right, that does the carpentry work as well as project managers and so forth?
Correct. We have project managers and then carpenter ones and carpenter twos and then apprentice carpenters after that.
Okay, wonderful. All right, so we were talking about the family culture versus the team culture, and you mentioned this term, locus of control. And as I said in the introduction, it was a new term to me. I had not heard it, but when I went to look it up, I thought, this is really cool. So what is that? What is this for the listeners? What kind of definition can you put on it where we can kind of grab onto it?
Yes. So I first want to say that this term is 6 months new to me is when we discovered it, but it really aligned with what a lot of things we were working on. But the gist of it is it's considered to be, locus of control is considered to be an important aspect of someone's personality. It considers the tendency of people to believe that control resides internally within them or externally with others or the situation. So it kind of breaks it down to, is someone an internal person or an external person?
So it's kind of like, it's almost, I even want to use the word focus of control. It's almost like the idea that I say I have control of what happens in my life versus somebody else has control. Is that kind of, is correct. That right?
Yes.
So how does it play out in your business? What are some of the ways you see this as being part of your business?
So we have always been focused on the mentality of the own it mentality. Someone being able to own their mistakes, but also allowing us to praise their accomplishments. And we've always kind of coined that term as a positive person.
Okay.
And our journey towards finding those people and removing the non-people from the team, it's been a journey of education for us. So we find this as it's the foundational element for team building, in my opinion.
So it's a little easier concept to get a grasp on than the own it mentality, perhaps.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. And so, by the way, I know we're going to get somebody that writes in and said, did Jeff say there were people who were non-people? So now Jeff believes everybody is a person and they are special and they are important. There are no non-people out there. So, all right. So what we're looking at is this idea that someone says, I own this, or I have control over how I respond to the world around me or to difficult. I'm assuming most of this focuses around sort of challenges or negative things, or is there a component of it where it focuses on positive stuff as well?
Well, it just comes down to whether you feel you're responsible for your future outcomes, or your future outcomes will be determined by other people or situations.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great way to say it. I think that's a super definition. If that's not in the dictionary yet, it really should be. So you mentioned that this is a component of personality. Now, my wife's a clinical social worker. I've dealt with DISCs. In fact, Steve and I were just talking about my DISC profile, and I took DISC 25 years ago, and my profile has not changed more than one or two points on each of the DISC. And so what I'm curious about here is, you mentioned that locus of control is part of the personality. So can this be developed and or changed within a person? Because I've always been under the impression that personality doesn't change. You are who you are. And I've heard people say, hey, Tim, I am who I am. What you see is what you get. That's it, dude. So can this change in a person? Do you know?
Yes, it can.
Oh, okay.
And I personally believe people can change. I believe there's a degree of change. You know, doing a 180 is a difficult aspect. But I personally, when I look at myself, my DISC has changed significantly over the years as I've learned to be a better leader and business owner. So it all comes down to awareness. So, you know, can an internal locus of control be developed within a person? And my answer is absolutely 100%. However, it's up to the person to want to do it and to do it. On a professional level, it's my responsibility to allow a path for that to happen within our business.
Sounds like an old joke I heard one time. And how many psychiatrists does it take to change a light bulb? Say only one, but the light bulb has to really want to change. So I see that and I understand it. So in other words, the individual has to say, me making excuses, let's say, is unacceptable. I want to own, or I want to take control over where I go. And then they stand a chance of actually changing from this external locus of control to internal.
Yes, they have to learn to take responsibility for the outcome of the situation, rather than shifting blame to someone else or something other than themselves.
So you mentioned you have to provide a path. Now this is going to be a tough one, I think. But how do you know? I mean, let's suppose Tim Fowler is working for you and he always makes excuses and it's never his fault and, you know, this kind of thing. How do you know if I have the desire? Because I sure don't want to lose my job. And if you ask me, hey, Tim, do you want to? And I'm what am I going to say? Yeah, I want to change. You know, so how do you know if putting the time and energy into Tim is worth it, whether I'll take the path or not? And any thoughts on that?
Yeah, you have to be upfront and direct. And if you have trust between the two people, you can have a healthy confrontation or that healthy discussion. If there's a lack of trust, it can quickly turn into more of a combative situation. But you have to have the conversation. And, you know, their awareness, again, is the biggest thing. So like I talked about in the previous podcast, that the three columns between, you know, attitude on the far right, if they're already over there, you know, in the good attitude, they're going to be more susceptible or more willing to take this approach. If they've got the bad attitude, they're probably going to be less willing to take it. But I can say when we have a process called the PIP, Personal Improvement Plan, and the moment we have that conversation that we're going to put somebody on that plan and make them specifically aware of what has been happening, two things happen. The first is they say, no, thank you. And then that's the invitation for them to leave. Or we jump into the process and either it works or it doesn't, but that's the start of it.
So it came up in a meeting just a couple of weeks ago, one of our production manager roundtable meetings, someone suggested a PIP for one of the production managers. And then somebody else says, isn't that always punitive? So how do you get that idea that that's not just a punitive thing, or does it matter if they see it as punitive, then that tells you something?
Yeah, it does. It does. So the purpose of it is to provide awareness, raise the specific issues, but also provide a safe atmosphere for them to go through the plan. And within the plan, they have, it can be a 9-week, 10-week, 12-week plan, whatever it's going to take for it to become a habit. But there needs to be the ability for them to fail. So it's a 3-strike rule. So they typically have between 3 or 4 points that they're working on, that they're reporting on weekly. And if they fail 2 of those, they're done. So it's the 3-strike rule. So on the 3rd fail, they're done.
Right.
But they know it. Right. So
go to locus of control. Again, I can, you know, use myself. I don't think I have this problem. I think I own everything, maybe a little bit too much. But the idea that maybe I'm not owning, maybe I don't have that internal, what might go into a PIP that would help develop internal locus of control? Do you have an example of what might go into that plan?
Yes. So you need to cite the specific issue. And you need to have a date, you need to have a time, and you need to have the people involved. And then you need to talk about the effect of that issue, what it how it affected a client's experience, how it affected the team, what was the monetary effect, what was the scheduling effect. And you're going to have probably two or three of those examples. Again, very specific examples. And they've got to sign this agreement that they acknowledge this issue. And this, it's kind of a forced vulnerability moment, because we're saying it in words and we have the same thing on paper, and they have to acknowledge it. And that is typically the first step in changing or getting into owning your locus of control, is showing a little bit of vulnerability, that you're willing to say, yes, I was wrong. I want to do better. I'm going to do better.
Yeah, because the external locus of control tends to be blaming other people and making excuses, right?
Right. Yes.
Yeah. So if they're willing to say, hey, I own that, I need to change, then that sounds like the beginning of something that could. And then on the PIP, just to explore that just a little bit more, is there like a weekly check-in that says, you know, how are we doing on this and so forth?
Yes, we have a spreadsheet basically that we print out, and it's got a scorecard on it. Each week we go through. And so if they fail, it shows up as a red, and so on. So they can visually see how they're doing as well. Yeah. But it's their responsibility to report on the issues. So, and that's a part of taking ownership.
Okay, cool. All right. So I mean, you've got a great company going there. I think, how does this whole idea of the locus of control impact the company? What are some of the things that you're seeing that, you know, as you've had the own it mentality already for a while, but so you're just continuing it maybe a little bit deeper.
Correct.
What's the impact on a company when you have this really going?
Well, the impact is specifically focused on a better working team. The team is having more fun. There's more trust. There's actually a lot more trust, and trust is the foundation of every successful team. So it's just generally a better environment. It literally breeds more ownership across the board from everyone, and it also breeds more support. So when we do know someone happens to be struggling, there's more support given to that person. And sometimes that might be some scheduling delays or products showing up that are legitimately outside of someone's control, but we have that culture of we're taking ownership and responsibility of it. So the more people are coming in to help and support, and that's been, it's probably the most rewarding thing to see is the team building aspect from this.
So it's kind of like a good germ that infects the company. I couldn't think of right. Inoculation, let's say, a vaccination. That's what it is. It's right. A vaccination that sort of affects everybody as it moves through the company.
Yeah.
So let's just talk for a second about business owners. And I know a lot of the challenge that I have, particularly working with production managers and production staff, is that many times production feels like the owner passes everything off on them, sales, development, whatever. And I'm just wondering, you know, what kind of advice you would give to business owners that might be listening in on this, that might be that inoculation that gets it started within the company so that people then start developing this locus of control.
Yeah, it all starts with leadership. So you've got some big problems on your team. I should say, if you have big problems on your team, you need to look in the mirror. And the more that we as owners blame our production department or blame a certain role in the company, the more we are leading our team down the wrong path. It needs to start from the top and acknowledge that there's problems and acknowledge that you need help, even as a leader. And what you're immediately doing is creating a trusting environment. You're asking for feedback. You're getting opinions from people. So many people on the team want to share their opinions, and giving them an avenue to do that is really important in this.
Yeah, and it feels to me like if I don't feel like the owner of the company is willing, anybody, even a mid-level manager, like if I'm a carpenter and I have a production manager that seems to like always it comes down on me, I'm less likely to say, hey, I messed up. But if somebody above me in the pecking order, if you will, is willing to say, hey, sorry about that, dude, I messed up. I should have gotten this for you. Right. Can you help me out? Perhaps, you know, fix this thing. Then others are more likely to be able to come and say, hey, we're behind on the schedule and I know why I messed up this or something like that. You feel like that's common or true?
Yeah, it is. People taking ownership of issues. Now, they could be little issues, they could be big issues, but a little issue can often turn into a big issue with a client.
Yeah.
So, you know, just 2 weeks ago, I was having a phone conversation with a client, and I set their expectations that they would be receiving something, and I did not get it done. And that was my fault, and I had to own it, and I did. And I apologized to the client in front of my team, in front of the team that was there. And it's just a big, you know, remodeling is tough. This is a tough business. And the more that we have everyone on the same page, rowing in the same direction. So
one of the terms you've been bringing up a lot is team. And I want to kind of talk a little bit about Patrick Lencioni's book, The Five Dysfunctions of the Team, a little bit, because I think that plays in here. But before we get there, do you think this has to be everybody on your team? Because again, I'm sitting here thinking, like, from the ears of the people out there in podcast world, like, hey, can't a apprentice, like in your world, Jeff, you know, not have this and still be a valuable member of the team?
No, everyone has to have this. I mean, it's just basic.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know. I believe that. I just, you know, people are grasping at straws for employees nowadays. And sometimes they're willing to say, you know what? I sense this problem, but I sure need a body on job site. So how do you answer that?
Slow down. You got to find the right person. One rotten apple spoils a barrel. And it's just a matter of time. So,
okay. So Michael Jackson proved that one bad apple doesn't spoil the whole bunch, but you know, all right. Those of you who are over 50 can probably remember that song. So anyway, so let's shift gears a little bit. Let's just talk about those five dysfunctions, because I think they fit into what you're talking about here, Jeff, in a way that maybe will bring it into a capsule, so to speak, and help us kind of define this a little bit more. So what are the five dysfunctions of the team? Patrick Lencioni, great little book on, very easy read, great little book on team building. But let's just kind of go down through those and talk about a little bit about how they interact with this locus of control.
Sure. So the five dysfunctions, the first one, and I don't know if I'm getting these totally correct in terms of the titles, but the first one is trust building. The second one is constructive conflict. The third one is committing to decisions. The fourth one is holding peers accountable. And the fifth one is sharing and attaining common goals.
Yep.
So when I look
at the locus, let's talk about trust building, because you mentioned that a couple of times as well during the other, you know, the first part of this podcast. So what does that got to do here?
So trust building, the best way to build trust among the team is going through trust building exercises. And that's typically where you're trying to get people to talk about some vulnerabilities that they have. And that is actually the foundation for building trust. Now, the locus of control comes in before that, in that if somebody... It's much more easy or possible. People with an internal locus of control are more willing to be vulnerable, and folks that are external are not. They're going to struggle with that. Now, can they get there? Eventually, yes. But that's just the foundation, showing your vulnerability and then jumping into the trust building.
Okay. So the you've got listed as constructive conflict. I think the book actually calls it group process.
Okay.
Group process, but that's what he talks about. Talks about how to deal with the conflict. So again, like, what's that got to do here? How does that fit into this little nut of the locus of control?
Well, it's all about, that comes down to trust building. So if you do have trust with your team, you're able to have, say, a tricky conversation about something, and you know that you're not going to offend somebody, but you can say it in a meaningful and supportive way.
Okay.
Versus getting into a negative conflict.
So this is huge, because an awful lot of what happens in companies is people hold stuff and they don't talk about it. And then all of a sudden they're gone. They call up and say, I'm taking my 2 weeks. I'm out of here.
Right.
And you go like, why? And the only answer they have is because I get a dollar or more somewhere else. But that's probably not it. It's probably something that they held in. And then on the flip side of it, the owner managers maybe aren't as good about pulling it out and dealing with it that way. And so the team is divided. The team doesn't function towards a good goal.
Right.
All right. So making decisions.
So when you have trust and you have people who are willing to have those difficult conversations, it allows for a more open and spirited debate to happen, and eventually a consensus can appear, but a decision gets made. And on our team, sometimes department managers will make a decision. Sometimes I'm making that decision. But whenever I make the decision, it's on a consultative basis. I like to hear as many opinions as I can, and then we make a decision. But you know, it's not about getting everyone to say, yes, that's the right thing. It's just because you're never going to get that. But it's about building a consensus, and then everyone is aware of the goal and why we're doing it. And whether they agree slightly or disagree slightly is fine, but everyone's on the same page.
So it's amazing that this whole concept is based on that ability to trust, because people, like I know a lot of business owners, they'll have a meeting and they'll ask for people's input. Nobody says anything. And then they leave the meeting and they say, all right, well, if nobody wants to participate, I guess I'll just decide.
Right.
As opposed to, I mean, they all have something to say. I know they do, because I've had conversations with people and they share information with me, but there's something about the trust that's lacking between the facilitator of that meeting and the people involved in it. And once that's built, then you can hear what other people have to say, and you do get better decision-making that way.
Right.
Cool. Now, what about this peer accountability? Isn't it the boss's job to hold everybody accountable for everything?
That is one way to look at it. And, you know, I'm not going to be a micromanager, and I don't want to have micromanagers on the team. I want people knowing and owning their position and, you know, working through it. So our culture is one where if somebody is having a bad day, you know, we can hold each other accountable in a supportive way. Life happens, you know, we're all going through different things, especially as we're coming out of this pandemic. Just with that idea that everyone's performance is transparent, it goes a long way.
Yeah, so I think, does this take the form of, like, once we've made a decision as a company, we're going to do this, and then somebody on the job site perhaps isn't participating, you think good teamwork is for someone else to say, hey, Bob, you know, remember we talked about this, and you know, this is for all of us? Or is that kind of the idea?
That's the idea. But also making sure, you know, if somebody's not showing up on time or they're leaving early, they don't need to come to me to talk to me about it. They don't need to go to their department lead. They can handle that directly with them.
Yeah.
So, and that extends to me too. And one of the things, so I struggle with my time. I'm constantly overloading myself. So I have Susie, our office manager, is constantly helping me and pushing me on that. And 3 years ago, and this was kind of the one of the things that really kicked off our the whole PIP structure, is I let somebody go and it was a surprise to them.
Right.
And that was a total failure on my leadership.
Right.
And I had a and then I also had to go around the entire company and make sure everyone felt safe about it. And it was a big learning experience for me. But my production manager, Tim, just he did a great job. Was like, well, you know, he didn't know. I mean, whose fault is that? Like, that's mine.
Yeah. So I tell the make the illustration of like a football team. If somebody, you know, messes up, like the linemen mess up, something like that, you know, the coaches are going to deal with it next week. But you also know that when they get back in that huddle, somebody's talking to that guy. Right. Somebody's saying, hey, dude, you got to protect me better. You know, so they're but not as a punitive thing, but as an encouraging thing that says, you know, we're in this together. We're working on it together. So peer accountability is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big deal in this. And then the last one of the dysfunctions or the I wish it was the five functions of a team. I just don't like the dysfunction part of it.
Right.
But it says shared and attainable common goals. What has that got to do with the whole deal?
Well, that again is moving out of the individual to the team. If someone is that an outward focus, they're blaming other people. They're more likely to only worry about their personal goals versus the shared common goals of the team. And when you have the team is working really well, everyone is very clear on what the goals are. And and you're reporting on them once a month or every 2 weeks, whatever your rhythm is. But it has to do with clarity and purpose of the team.
You know, this, again, I try to use a lot of sports illustrations because a lot of the guys that I speak to are into sports. But, you know, I heard some commentators one time talking about, was that the best dunk you've ever seen? And one of the guys goes, no, they lost the game. Who cares about the dunk? It doesn't matter whether that was the best slam dunk in the world. They lost the game. If he had shot it from the 3-point line, they would have what? Won the game. Right. And so the whole idea in sports, it's like, who cares who has the most runs, home runs and what? It's the people that win the World Series that win the prize. And the same thing with football, basketball, whatever sport you want. There are some individual sports, obviously, where it's primarily about the individual, but the common goals are huge in terms of team building. Well, Jeff, this has been amazing again, and I really hope people take the time to really listen in for this podcast because there are some deep gems in here, but any like last minute nugget, gold nugget, something you just kind of want to dump on us here to help us think a little bit more about this topic?
It's just that, you know, there's three building blocks to developing an internal focus, and that's, you know, change the blame game.
Okay.
Take charge and embrace failure. I can't tell you how important it is to acknowledge and understand failure and grow from it.
Reduce the blame game. What's the other one?
Change the blame game.
Change.
Number two is take charge of your situation. And three, embrace failure. Don't be afraid of it.
All not easy things, but wildly important.
Fantastic. Right. Well, Jeff.
And I got one more.
Okay, good.
Teamwork is our ultimate competitive advantage.
Yeah.
And so we're leaning into this. But if you think about it, your company's teamwork is your ultimate competitive advantage.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, and Jeff, maybe you can just corroborate this if it's true. It's at your advantage with employment. It's your advantage with your clients. It's your advantage with your private life. It's an advantage all the way around. Is that right?
Absolutely. 360 degrees.
Yeah. Way cool. Thank you so much, Jeff. This has been absolutely fantastic.
Thank you.
And we're going to have you back again, especially when we need to think a little bit more, you know?
Jeff's good at that.
So thank you so much. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. See ya.
Take care.
So Jeff, Tim, this is a bit different, but I mean, this is so important. I mean, this is, you know, Jeff always brings kind of that a different look at things and just a great way to tackle team building, culture, company culture. He really has an impressive view of how to put together a great team.
Yeah, well, one of the great things about it is it's working for him. And I think one of the impressive things for Jeff is that he's always working on it. I've never talked with him when he wasn't working on something in his business. And I do know, again, I know a lot of business owners, know a lot of people that they get to a point, they get comfortable, they say, it's all dialed in, we're doing great. And then it slowly erodes because they're not paying attention. And I think one of the great things that Jeff brings to his business, he seems to be paying attention and learning as he goes through his life. And there's a whole lot of stuff in there. And like I said, during the podcast, please listen a couple of times because there's a lot of depth here.
Yes. But
just this idea of changing the blame game. That's, you know, like, all right, let's change that game. And then taking charge, right? Saying, okay, I'm gonna take responsibility or take charge of this. And then embracing failure. I've never been good at that, you know? But I think that's a huge thing in terms of saying, you know what, we can learn from failure. And it's interesting that he didn't say embrace challenge. He called it failure. You know, and we want to make everything sound better than it really is. It's failure. We fail. How do we address that as we move forward?
Yeah. And, you know, he also, one thing I picked up that I thought was build a consensus within the team and having everybody on board. And I think, you know, I just think back to times where I've been on a work crew, and a person may not agree with the direction we're going, and you watch what happens to their effort.
Yeah, well, one of the things that's really important, and he said it, but it went by really fast. Consensus on a psychological standpoint is not everybody agreeing.
Yes, that
consensus
was the important part.
Consensus is everybody felt heard.
Yes.
Everybody felt like they were part of the decision, and they may not agree with the final decision, but they at least feel like whatever the decision was made, people paid attention to what I thought. And that is very, very hard for production managers and business owners to get a grip on because they feel like they have to control it all. They have to keep it under control. And when you ask for people's opinion, when you ask for their input, it means you're giving up some power or something like that. And Jeff is showing us, no way, it's the best way to go.
Yeah. Well, once again, you know, we always want to thank Jeff Forward for joining us, and we want to thank you for listening to another episode of The Tim Fowler Show.
And remember, at The Tim Fowler Show, we're working hard to eliminate "it is what it is" from your vocabulary.
This has been another episode of The Tim Fowler Show. Want to hire Tim and fast track your growth? Visit remodelersadvantage.com/consulting to learn more. And if you'd like more information about Roundtables, our world-class peer advisory program, please send me an email at steve@remodelersadvantage.com. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to the show and comment on iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.